Can you be honest with me? What is it about me that is like, that makes you not want to sit here?
Honestly?
Yeah.
It's like everything. Starting with your face first. Just like the expression on it is really bad. You sort of look like you're smelling something that doesn't smell good, or like you're like squinting even though you're wearing glasses. Like your eyes don't work. You're effeminate. But not in, like, a good way. It's almost insulting to women, the way you're effeminate. Because, like, you're not androgynous. You're just, like, soft and doughy. You don't look like you have bones under your body at all. You're just sort of like an old baby, you know? You just seem very uncomfortable. You know, like, a little bit, like, you're apologizing for your existence. Just...
complete answer.
TBTL!
Here's a sentence I never thought I'd say, but if you thought a sausage couldn't really hurt anyone, frankly, think again.
I was just trying to find E.T.
E.T. Classic Spielberg.
Oh.
Weaver of Dreams.
I love when his finger lights up.
That's how you can tell he's an alien.
And his face.
And his face.
So, what are you working on these days?
Mostly I just sit around the house and complain about things.
Yeah? How's that working out for you?
Well, I can't complain, so, you know.
Is this a joke? Because if it is a joke, I just want to say that I get it. I get the joke, and I'm in on it also. And it's hilarious.
All right, hello, good morning, and welcome, everybody.
Ooh.
To a Tuesday edition of TBTL, the show that just might be too beautiful to live. My name is Luke Burbank. I am your host.
I'm ready to f***ing smoke the world with the rock and roll. Good deal.
Coming to you from the Burbank Springs Broadcast Center, perched atop Alabama Hill, in Bellingham, Washington, the Bay City. Another non-rainy day happening here. Two in a row, my friends, if you're scoring at home. It's amazing. We had rain, I believe, every single day for the month of January and then into February. And it's amazing what will happen when you just get like 2 days of non-rain. People are out mowing their lawns. I saw a woman sunbathing. We have lost our damn minds around here. It's still like 43 degrees, but just due to it not actively raining, we're all very excited. I was out this morning picking up dog poop and just loving the spring-like weather. I'm not even kidding. The thought occurred to me. Spring is just around the corner. All right. What are we doing here on episode 3095 in a collector series?
Let the fun begin.
Oh, I know. I was so close yesterday to going into the broom closet here at the Burbank Springs Broadcast Center and seeing if I could make the broom that I have here stand up on end because of something I saw on Twitter.
It's a kind of magic.
People saying that because of the spring equinox or something, because of the sort of alignment of the earth and the planets and the moon and whatnot, brooms would stand on end. And so I did a little digging into that. We'll tell you what I found out coming up. Also, we have had a lot of fun at the expense of Joaquin Phoenix on this program.
For me to like to be able to connote that, like, my artism is bigger than that.
But his speech when he won the Oscar the other night was kind of amazing to me. I didn't see it when it happened because I was on an airplane. And I saw references to it on Twitter, something about cows and quoting his late brother, River Phoenix's band's lyrics, and I was like, okay, whatever. But then I watched the speech yesterday, and it really had an impact on me, so we'll play that. Plus, emails and V-mails. The emails are in, my friends, and Jackson Brown, the singer, appears to be a certified grump. Like, multiple sources confirming my experience that he is not the world's friendliest dude. And you know what's kind of going on right now? New Hampshire is having their primary. And we have a soulful rocker from that very place who's joining us right now. The longest running Cobro of the show, known for his drawings of tall ships. He is Andrew Walsh, and he's here now. Good morning, my friend.
Good morning, Luke. It happened. It happened. It's going to happen in June. Former Seattle Storm basketball player Swin Cash headed to the Basketball Hall of Fame, the Women's Basketball Hall of Fame. And oh, I saw that news.
The Bask Hall?
The Bask Hall. Is that what they call it? The Bask Hall?
I don't know.
About
they call
basketball.
It the Rock Hall.
Oh, right.
So I'm just trying to make that into a thing.
Do you remember Swin? We used to have Swin on the old radio show back on our in our Cairo days. Not as TBTL, but on Ross and Burbank. I remember booking her. She was always a really good guest, if I recall. I always liked Swin Cash. It was a
sure.
heady time for the Seattle Storm. Her and Sue Bird out there.
Well, congratulations to Swin. Also, just one of the top 10 names in all of sports.
Yeah, right?
Swin Cash.
I know.
That's pretty dope.
It's really good.
I don't want to start the show by bragging, Andrew, but
this song goes out to all the coffee lovers of the world.
But I had a real win when I was in L.A. this weekend in my ongoing project to try to drink my coffee basically black. I've been reducing all the other things I put in it slowly. Like, I stopped putting half and half in there a while ago. You drink your coffee black, like the alpha male that you are. But that's always been a struggle for me. I used to put tons of like half and half in and like Splenda, and then I got it down to no half and half and just Splenda. And now it's like only a little bit of Splenda. So I was talking yesterday on the show about how I've been doing this TV story about Mandy Moore. And we, on whatever day it was, Friday of last week, we were recording in this sound studio. I think it's called the Boulevard Studios in Hollywood. We're like an interview with her. So we're sitting, you know, talking to her in this one room. And this is like, actually, this is a room where Liberace used to record his albums. And also Pink Floyd recorded a bunch of their stuff in this studio. It's, I guess, sort of legendary. But in the other, in an adjacent room, there was all of Mandy Moore's team of very nice people there to sort of manage just the Mandy Moore-ness of the whole situation. And then eventually there was a point where Mandy was also hanging out in there. And John Goodwin and I were trying to get some coffee out of this room. That's where the coffee was. And now, you know that kind of embarrassing thing that happens when you come into a small space where there's like 20 people and they have a whole thing going, and now suddenly you are exclusively the focus of the attention because, you know what I mean? Like it was this tiny little cramped room that was adjacent to the sound where the producer would sit. So like not where the soundboard is, but a room next to that. Tiny little room, and everyone's in there doing their thing. There's no way to just like subtly kind of slip in and do something. Everyone's going to turn and look at you and focus on what you're doing. And what we were doing was getting coffee, and it was behind Mandy Moore, and she was like, oh, here's the coffee, do you want it? And she's handing us the coffee, and every movement that I was doing made me feel self-conscious because I just was in their space. I was putting them out. And then she said, oh, I don't know if there's any cream or anything, but do you guys need that? And I was like, oh, no, black is fine. Mm-hmm. It kind of wasn't. I would have liked some Splenda. But anyway, the point is, I said, oh, black is fine. And John took his black, too, because he's also an alpha male. And she said, oh, black coffee, a couple of real men, I see. And I have never felt more macho in my life than when I just went black coffee, shaken, not stirred. I don't know why I added that detail, but I felt a little James Bondy.
Yeah.
To just be like, no, I don't need all that. All that frivolity in this coffee. Just black coffee, like a man. Thank you very much. I'll take that. And then I went and then I choked it down in the studio. I was like, I could use a little Splenda, but okay.
Did you just like kind of tip your cowboy hat and say, thank you kindly, ma'am, and just walk out of there with your spurs a-jangling? Is that how it went down?
Well, basically, but then the weird part was I looked in the other part of the studio, Lil Nas X was standing there, and then I had to have a dance off with him, and I won some Doritos, I think. I don't know.
What happened to your mustache during that dance?
Things that I'll never be able to unsee, Andrew.
Yeah, shave it, man. It's the devil's now. Shave it.
Yeah. It's been haunted.
That's not your stash anymore. What made you think of that? Are you drinking it black today?
Mostly. That's the thing. That was the other part of it was, to be honest with you, when I then drank that coffee, it wasn't bad. I know that I'm not saying anything that the listeners don't already know, and particularly like our friend Barry at Broadcast Coffee. People that are real coffee heads will tell you, you get the good stuff and you don't need a bunch of additives. It is a thing you can consume by itself. It has enough flavor in it. And as I've been slowly weaning myself off all of the additives, I've been figuring that out to some degree. This was like the first time in maybe my life, where I literally just like got a mug of black coffee and then just actually drank it and found it to be a pleasant experience.
Mm-hmm.
So that was good. I wasn't hating it. And also I was glad that I was able to look macho in front of this mm-hmm. room full of women, let's be honest. If it was dudes, well, no, I would have been insecure no matter what. The good news is my insecurity doesn't see gender.
Yeah, no, that's Andrew. Really fantastic.
I'm insecure in front of everybody.
That is weird. I don't go in for... Well, see, now I'm just going to ruin your story. Do you have anything else you want to talk about before I just get into gender dynamics as they relate to food choices? Because that doesn't seem like a fun thing to talk about.
Just imagine me right now, Andrew, microwaving some popcorn, putting it into a container, and then just sitting back and just eating one piece while you get into this shit.
Do you look like Michael Jackson in Thriller by any chance as you're eating that popcorn?
Maybe. I'm not like other guys, Andrew. Okay, I'm eating.
Okay.
My popcorn. Go for it. What are you about to say?
So I was going to say, popcorn is the least manly food, and I've got a whole thesis about it. Oh, I would agree 100%. Not at all.
You're right.
No, I just, you know, that I know that it was all in good fun, but the idea of it's like manly to drink your coffee black is like you know, I don't know. I just kind of – or that men grill. Like this is what gets to me about the Arby's ads. Like we have the meat. There's so much machismo in there, and it just drives me crazy because it's like – I mean they're not specifically gendered, but you know what they're going for there. And this idea that like a man loves his meat and his coffee black, none of that appeals to me. However, mm-hmm. let's bring up the Levitard show because we're 5 minutes in and I haven't mentioned it yet. One of my favorite segments of last week was when they just seemingly on a whim, like honestly it seemed like it really was on a whim, somebody brought up during the break that another ESPN newscaster personality whose name I don't remember, so that really kind of kills the joke, but said that he looks like he really loves steak because he's got a steak eater's chin. I assume a
what?
Pretty so they get on this whole thing like they're like what, and Dan the host is trying to get them off this topic, but then he just ends up giving up and he's like, fine, get all of the ESPN commentators you can on the line, when we come back from break we're just going to ask all of them whether or not they think steak is overrated, and we're going to try to guess if they like steak based on their chins. And I gotta say, my thesis on gender dynamics vis-a-vis food aside, it was a pretty great segment.
Man, steak eater's chin is just troubling on so many levels.
I assume it's a broad concept. Kind of, you know, very masculine look, I assume.
I guess so, yeah. I've never thought of that as a way of, like, I mean, does that mean that Jay Leno is the world's biggest fan of steak?
I don't know.
Is like, it the larger your mandible is, the more you love steak?
I don't think that. I mean, I we can go to the tape. We could just... I mean, what if we did this? Honestly, idea here. How far into the show are we? 13 minutes. This could actually solve a lot of problems. First of all, our time and also our download numbers. Do you think we could get away with it if we just did about 10 to 15 minutes at the top of every show and mm-hmm. the end of every show so that the casual listener will think it's us talking the whole time, but then sandwich in between like our favorite hour of the Levitard show? And
I think we do it the opposite,
huh?
Because we want to grab people at the top of the show, and Lord knows nothing we do does that.
Okay.
So I'd say we start with Levitard, so people think they're listening to the Dan Levitard show, and then we insert some TBTL content in the middle, and then we end with I don't know another either Levitard or some other good show, so that people end their experience with a positive vibration.
Okay.
So they start the show. They love this show called TBTL. They can't put their finger on it, but it's because it now features less TBTL.
Now, with less TBTL. We have a meeting with our marketing guy later. No joke. Brandon, can you write that down? Now, with less TBTL! ! Because I think there's something there.
The problem is that actually does sound like a funny tagline to me.
Yeah, it really
and,
does.
Like, our poor marketing guy, Brandon, who's awesome, is just like, he's so, I think, kind of like understanding as to our vibe, and he's so long-suffering. I mean, his job is to try to get more listeners and raise the profile of the show, mm-hmm. and most of our ideas are about, like, I can't get into specifics, but we have one particular project in the offing right now that's going to be cool for us. Like, it's a thing we've never done before. It's very exciting, but... It's definitely a thing where I think most of our – I think he has to like – when we're on a conference call and he says, what about – what are you guys looking at right now? And I pipe up with, Well, we thought one catchphrase could be now with even less TBTL. He must have to mute his line and go, what the actual? And then unmute it and go, well, that's one thing we could do. Like, to just and the same for Lindsay, who also works mm-hmm. in that division. Just like the fact that they are working very hard to try to help us have more listeners. And our usual response to that is, what could we do that makes the show sound even less worth people's time?
I know. We are lucky, though, and this is just going to sound brown nosy, but those two people both get the show.
Yes.
They understand TBTL like more than your casual person or most people. And we are so lucky in that way. Like, he will throw, like, I think it was his idea. What is the tagline on our website? When they redid our websites, all the other shows have real quotes from, like, blurbs from, like, famous mm-hmm. people saying, this is a great show, you should check it out. You know, and then it's attributed to some famous person. It was Brandon, I believe, who came up with the idea of using this quote for our show, which came from a TBTL listener in a iTunes review. The best way to waste the maximum amount of time while being marginally informed. Like, that was Brandon's idea. So I'm just lucky that this guy gets it, although you're right. He probably does want to kill us most of the time.
But he hides it really
well. He does.
And that's, I mean, probably one of the main sort of elements of his job and Lindsay's job as it relates to our little program. Mm-hmm. All right.
Can I just say one thing? This is a TBTL challenge.
I was just about to say, we're about to go to break on time for once.
No, this is it.
No, we're not.
This is a quick promise. I am going to say, like, for my challenge to myself and a promise to the listener is I will go the rest of this week, which is only three more shows. I'll go the rest of this week without bringing up the Lebatard show at all, because I'm doing it too much. It's annoying me. It's not good content just talking about another show all the time. So that is my promise. If you bring it up and you trap me, Luke, that's on you. But I will participate if you lead me to it, but I will not bring it up for the rest of this week. Mark it down.
It's hard because this show, it really is just our lives. I say this all the time, but it's true. This show is us just talking about whatever is – I mean, there's always a sort of a plan in place, but we rarely execute the plan. And so most of the show ends up just being us kind of extemporating on whatever's in our mind. And if we're consuming a particular TV show or radio show a lot, that's what's – the word cloud in your brain right mm-hmm. now, the biggest two words are Le Batard.
Yeah.
Like, that's it. Yep. And maybe second place, Stu Gotts. Like, so of course it's going to come up. It just right. happens. I think we have to kind of roll with it, even though it is weird programming for the listeners out there. But I just have to assume that they're sort of used to it at this point.
Well, I'm going to come up with a bunch of alternative things. I might even do this today. No joke. I might come up with a list of things that if I start to – I wonder if this is almost like a smoking cessation or something. Like when I have the urge on the show to bring up that other show – I will turn to my list of fallback topics and just enter right into one of them, whether or not it even makes sense.
I'd like the Chantix of talking about the Lebatard show.
Yes, exactly.
I cannot think about the Chantix ad now without thinking about like that Paul F. Tompkins yep. Ray Liotta voiceover, uh-huh. which is also the Kyle Dunnigan Ray Liotta impression. I talked about this. See, you want to talk about Lebatard. I want to talk about Kyle Dunnigan's bits on Twitter. The one where he's being Ray Liotta, but Ray Liotta has no idea that Chantix is a smoking cessation drug. And so he wants to smoke during the commercial and just have them CGI it out of the commercial.
Oh, my God.
Which is just so perfect. All right. Let's go to a break relatively on time here, and then we'll come back. We'll talk about the brooms in the news, and then I'm already worried about this Joaquin Phoenix thing because it's sincere, which is not really, you know, we traffic mostly in repeating other hit podcasts on this show or radio
not
shows.
Me.
We don't really traffic
not
in
me anymore.
Sincerity. Not you anymore. That's
that
old
guy.
Andrew.
Yeah.
But, like, we don't traffic in sincerity that much, but I have to say I really sincerely found what Joaquin Phoenix said to be interesting. We'll play it, and I hope that – I don't know. I hope that I don't get emotional, and I also hope that, like, it doesn't seem like I'm being, I don't know, overly attributing too much kind of deep meaning to something, but it did really it really made an impression on me, so I wanted to play that. And then mostly I want to just drag Jackson Brown all over the internet by way of this podcast, because I mentioned him in sort of passing yesterday on the show, and within like an hour we had two different messages from people saying, oh yeah, story checks out, which is weird, which makes me think there's really something there. So we'll talk about that as well. All coming up here on TBTL. Stay with us. Is this Mr. Roboto?
It most certainly is. It was released 37 years ago today on February 11th, 1983. Hey, Andrew, you're asking, what else happened on February 11th, this day in history, according to Retro News Now? Well, I'll tell you, The French Chef, hosted by Julia Child, premiered 57 years ago today.
Oh, lovely.
1963.
Lovely.
And The Beach, starring Leonardo DiCaprio, 20 years ago today, premiered in theaters. That's the year 2000, of course.
If you were to build a robot, Andrew.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a sex robot.
Maybe. Maybe a friendship robot.
What would you nickname him?
This is referencing something that I have forgotten that is just outside of my grasp.
It's a joke about an intro that got played once on this show from Archer that you will for the rest of your life.
I don't know if we've talked about this on the show. We talked about this in person, and then I believe we talked about it with some of our friends and colleagues at 8 p.m. But, I go through these. So I started on TBTL in 2012. Maybe it was around 6 months in or a year in, I started making intros, like, you know, as we know them today. At first, when I came to the show, the intros were just a dry open and then music and then you're talking. But then I went back and I was like, you used to do montages. Can we start doing montages again, right? Is that how you remember it?
I think it was that I was probably not doing them anymore because I was too lazy. And you were like, let me pick up that baton. And then immediately the intros got so much better.
And
from you
the
doing
listenership
them.
Shot up and we were hailed as heroes. I think what happened there was that was around the time that I started listening to the Kevin and Bean show, who, of course, they always do the montage intros at the beginning of their show. And I was like, Luke used to do that. Hey, can I start making them? So anyway, that's when I started making these intro montages that you hear at the beginning of every show. But my sensibilities have changed a lot in a mere 7 years, man. I would put stuff in there that I listen to now, and I'm just like, why? I mean, nothing that I don't think I ever played anything that like goes against what my values are now, but certainly things that were raw as far as a sense of humor is concerned and just downright dirty in the instance that you're talking about.
Well, we were not with APM at that time. We were just a free radical bouncing around the universe. So we kind of could do whatever we wanted. Although I guess we were technically associated with the sort of overall Cairo radio verse, because they were sort of still hosting the show until somebody over there tried to get us in big trouble by playing one intro from the Big Lebowski for bosses that were visiting from out of town, because this particular person didn't like our show and was trying to like basically get us banned from whatever that sort of network would be. But anyway, we were just kind of like, look, Archer is a TV show that airs on FX that it's not rated R. Like if you could turn it on, there's no thumbprint biometric ID to prove that you're over a certain age to watch it. And I feel like our show generally should reflect what is out there in the pop culture. You know what I mean? Like, in other words, if you can see something on TV quite easily on FX, you could hear it on our show. This was one little joke where Dr. Krieger designs a robot for pleasure, and the name of the robot is something very similar to the song that we are celebrating its anniversary today.
But
probably not something we'd play these days, being that we were older, wiser, and also associated with American public media.
Public radio-ier is another way of putting that.
Yes.
Yeah.
TBTL, now with less TBTL, but more public radio-ier. Brandon, we got it. We're there.
Boom, we just shortened our meeting by at least an hour.
Yeah, exactly.
Hello and welcome to Top Story.
I saw something on Twitter yesterday that I got so excited about, and it was a post from a woman saying that she didn't think this was going to work, but that NASA had said, and that's what jumped out at me, was that NASA was involved, that you could stand a broom up on its end because of something having to do with the alignment of the planets. And then this woman had done that, and then like hundreds, it's been liked 262,000 times and retweeted 60,000 times. Would you say that's more popular than any tweets you and I have sent?
More than you, yeah, certainly.
Okay. So it has been, everybody has been doing this, and I saw this and I was so psyched. I was about to test the theory, but then I thought to myself, does that check out? Does that story check out in your brain, Burbs? Like, is it really possible that we are in some sort of planetary alignment where brooms will stand on their end? And then, of course, because I'm a no fun Nick, I Googled it, and it was immediately like, this is a fun trick. By the way, it works because of the way the bristles of these brooms are. It does not have anything to do with the planets. It's not even the spring equinox. That's not even for like another month. Like, no part of the science of this story works out, but people are going crazy online for this. And the sheer joy that people are feeling when they get their broom to stand up, Andrew, because it's just the internet is full of videos of people standing these brooms up now.
But I'm looking at them. You sent me the link to the tweet thread, and I'm looking at all these videos. I'm still interested in knowing what's going on with the bristles that makes this happen.
Yeah, it's just some odd. It's a sort of an optical illusion of sorts, which is that the bristles, I think, create enough surface area, even though they're like individually fairly thin, that it's enough to support this broom. And then it's also a certain kind of broom that everyone, you know, you sort of buy, I don't know, maybe even like when you go to college or something. It's like if you were in a grocery store and they had a small home department, you could go there. They'd be like, that broom usually comes with a dustpan attached. It's sort of like, you know, it's sort of shorter on the bottom and kind of goes to one side. So you've got this real cool optical illusion thing going of where the broom handle itself is kind of leaning, but somehow the, whatever you want to call it, the surface area works out so this thing can stand up.
Okay. Couple of things. Did you end up trying it?
NASA's not involved.
Did you end up trying it at all? It still seems interesting to me. Okay. And did it work for you?
Yeah, totally.
Okay. I want to try it. I want to go run and grab my broom right now.
Do you have a broom like this?
Yeah. I should. Now, might be a chance that the one I'm thinking of got relegated to the outside, but I could go grab it really quickly. One thing that I'm seeing that I love is somebody went into like a Target-style store, you know, some sort of a kind of grocery store thing, and they took all the brooms. And they stood them up in the aisle, and it's creepy.
You love to see
It's really
love
creepy.
Can I play this? This is CNN. This is a meteorologist on CNN, and it's like this under the hashtag Broomstick Challenge. I have not watched this now, and I don't know when this is from. I don't know if this is from this year or what, but I think it's going to be – if this guy is actually – this meteorologist named Chad Myers, if he is actually presenting this as a meteorological or astrological event, that would be funny to me because clearly he did not Google it. I don't know what he's going to say, though. Can I just play the audio?
Yeah, let's hear it.
We'll see what he says. Okay.
It must be those stars, those planets that are out there. If you look out today, they're very close to each other. As the sun sets today, go out, you'll see Jupiter and Venus about that far apart. It's a beautiful sight. As they're saying, that must be why these things are standing up by themselves, but actually not. If you go by a broom, you stand it up on its own.
Okay, he's debunking.
All of this is about balance. And I've made a line down here where the center of gravity is. Now I'm not touching it.
You know what's funny is I'm watching this guy and I'm like, dude, why are you being so lame and player hating? But I started this thing by saying it's not real. Like, this guy's doing exactly what I did, but he's doing it to a larger audience and with visual aids. I'm just talking about it in the abstract.
Uh-huh. So you did do it, though. Was it satisfying? Did it still give you a feeling?
No, because I had already Googled, stupidly, I had already Googled it, like, you know, is this a real thing or not? And so I knew it wasn't. And so then I just wanted to test it out. I don't know why, for the sake of testing it out.
But it's still a real thing. That's
the magic.
Weird.
The magic had already been ruined. It would have been, to me, it would have been the closest that I'll ever be to being an astronaut if this was a real. Like, does that surprise you to hear that that's how my brain thought about it?
I mean, sadly, yes. But I mean, I guess when we lose the element of surprise, we got nothing left on this show.
Yeah.
You're like already on Amazon.com ordering astronaut helmets. You're like, I'm going to try this out, but first I have to really double down on the experience.
It made me feel close. If somehow the planets were aligning in a way that there was more gravity or weirder gravity or whatever it was, if that was actually happening between this planet and some other planet, and I was able to, standing here in Bellingham, Washington, the Bay City, put a broom in a hallway and have it do something it normally wouldn't do, that would make me feel like I was connecting to a larger cosmic event that would have felt like actually emotionally intense to me, believe it or not. And I don't know, I can't exactly explain why, but it felt important to me if that's what was going on. And then when I found out that it's just that these brooms are just kind of an optical – well, not an optical illusion, but you wouldn't think they would stand up, but in fact they do. Then it was just kind of like a fun party trick.
I mean, listen, from my perspective, and you won't be surprised to hear me take this angle, I just think it's really good that people are talking about brooms again and cleaning. And like really that's what's important here, you know, whether or not it was a rumor. I mean, it's gotten people talking, and I love that.
People like the Fort Wayne Tin Caps minor league baseball team that has their mascot putting the broom up and then doing a Fortnite dance behind it. By the way, the Fort Wayne Tin Cap, he's wearing a pot on his head a la Johnny Appleseed and doing like a pretty sick, I think he might be doing the Renegade dance. I don't have the music, and so I can't say exactly. But no, people are having lots of fun online with this. Now, what is your, just if we can quickly, before we get to Joaquin Phoenix, if we can talk cleaning for a moment, what is the absolute best broom, in your opinion, as the co-host of a cleaning podcast called Spotless?
What kind of job? What are we cleaning up? Are we sweeping a garage? Because if you're sweeping a garage,
push broom, right?
That's a push broom. Well, you need two brooms for that. You still need like a good solid, like an old fashioned straw broom, I would say, to whisk everything from the corners and the edges into the middle, and then the rest is a push broom. By the way, did I ever tell you this? This was a fun thing. My dad, who of course ran a kind of industrial business in Cleveland, would bring a lot of industrial supplies home. It was all on the up and up. Like, Jesus, relax, everybody. Yeah. But one of the things he would bring is this stuff that like you sprinkle on the floor. I remember being a kid and thinking it was antithetical, but then kind of loving it. It was like this pink, heavy, almost waxy sand stuff that you would sprinkle all over the floor, and it would keep the dust down while you swept everything up. So before you swept up all the dirt, you would just create an entire garage floor full of this pink sawdust stuff, and then you would sweep all of that up, and you would just keep sweeping it into the middle of the floor, where then I think you would employ either a shop vac or a dustpan.
I'll tell you what. I know the how do I put this? The Windex didn't fall far from the glass. I don't know. I get where you get your sort of like propensity towards cleanliness and order, because now I understand there's a practical thing for why you put down that pink stuff, but the idea that Bob Walsh would like basically before he got to cleaning, he would also pre-clean or whatever you want to call it. Like, this makes a lot of sense that you guys, there was a process because were you to sweep it and the dust were to kick up, I guess the dust would then settle in other places. So it makes logical sense, but it is a level of like precision going into this that you'll rarely find with other people. Also, not a surprise that you guys weren't allowed to eat in the car, and to this day you don't really mess with drive-through stuff for that reason. This all kind of makes sense when I hear about your upbringing.
Yeah, the drive-through for me now, also a big part of that, if we're being completely real about this, and I don't feel any need to hold back, is I also am, because I always order things like without cheese and whatnot, and it's like at a fast food place it's 50-50 that they'll get it right.
Yeah.
I also don't want to like be in the drive-thru, then open it up, find out it's wrong, and have to go back inside or get back in line. So that is part of it for me. But yeah, certainly eating in the car is not a pleasurable experience for me. You know, often people will call in with their shame eating stories where it's kind of like, yeah, I'm sort of shameful that I'm just chowing down in the car here, but it's also a pleasurable thing. Yeah, it doesn't ever feel pleasurable to me. It always feels like I'm a greasy oinker.
Oh, man. It's like one of my great joys in life to sit and eat in the car. But let's not talk about this because I'm actually getting hungry. Because,
yeah.
Like all I had yesterday was a yum salad from this Thai place that I go to a lot. And I was very like – I get the salad, which is a giant pile of veggies basically with all kinds of sauce on it. I was thinking about this as I left the place. My entire adult life, Andrew, I have been ordering Thai food probably once or twice a week, right? Mm-hmm. I have never gotten the spice level right. Hmm. Never once. Hmm. In 4,000 or more events. If it's 2 stars for me, it's a little bit not spicy enough. But if it's 3 stars, it's too much. And that's what I did last night. Like, I was like, I like it when it's spicy. You know, I've been going 2 stars and sometimes it's not been quite enough. So I went 3 stars and too much.
Wow. Mandy Moore is just thinking how unmanly you are right now. All of that black coffee.
I ordered zero cream on my yum salad. So, I mean, that do I get points for that at least?
I'm just kidding. That's another trope I hate. Manliness.
How many stars?
As it connects
how many
to stars?
How many stars do you go for when you order?
I usually go 4 if it's out of 5. I usually knock 1 star off. I like things kind of spicy. But it also depends on the place.
Kind of.
Some places will like really knock your socks off with it. You kind of got to know the place a little bit. But I default to 4.
Definitely. Yeah, I default. Well, here's the problem. If I go too high, then it's the food is basically – it's not inedible, but it becomes – you turn into one of those like hot wing challenges that you weren't trying to enter. So that's why I try to err on the side of caution because I don't want to like – you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like you ever get something and it's too much and then you're just like – you have to pace yourself. You have to psych yourself up for each bite because it's like – it's kind of a fun experience because as I learned when I did that Hot Cheeto story so many years ago, something called your trigeminal nerve gets stimulated when you eat spicy things and it actually gives you a mild high. Mm. That's why they think that kids like Flamin' Hot Cheetos and it's why – some adults like eating things that are spicy. So there's a kind of fun part to it, but if you go too hot, in my experience, ultimately you can't really enjoy the food as much. Mm. So I try to go low, but then if it's low, I'm also kind of bummed out.
Can I tell you a story about this? As a matter of fact, as I was experiencing this, and this is a long time ago now, several months back, I was thinking about how I wanted to tell you this story because I think that you would relate. Because you and I have a different relationship where it comes to chicken wings.
Manliness, like I'm really manly.
Yeah, I mean the way you're just like flexing.
The way I order food, the way I drink my coffee.
But chicken
my
wings.
My steak-eating chin.
Even when you were eating meat, you did not really enjoy buffalo wings. They're messy. They're kind of a pain to eat. Is that correct? Does that summarize
your
feelings?
Yes, and also, not to be gross, but like if they don't cook them through to my liking, they're a bit slimy. Mm-hmm. And that's that was the beginning, I think, of me not eating meat was like, I don't want to think about the kind of, I'm sorry, I'll just be blunt, the tendons and the connective tissue of this kind of nub of chicken meat. And if you don't cook it enough for me, that's I get an up close and personal experience with that.
Yeah, well, I still love them. I understand why you feel that way, and it's also weird for me because I hate being a mess. Mm-hmm. I need literally one napkin per wing. And so I'm always asking for more napkins because I don't like the idea of just leaving stuff on my face. But yet I do love wings. I mean, we sort of growing up, it was a big deal for, like, then as I was becoming, like, kind of a teenager, me and my dad
probably
would go to this
place. Your dad was
place.
Probably like, we're going to have wings, but also we need to get the hazmat washdown unit ready to go.
Yeah,
so each person would eat their wings, and then they would step into a controlled environment where they would be hosed down by four different solutions.
Then you eat another wing, and then you go back in. You know how it goes. But no, anyway, like, I think growing up, wings were special. And so I think that they remain like, kind of, oh, when I get in my head that I'm going to go out and have wings, like, it still is kind of it's just like a celebratory food for me. Anyway, that's all just the lead up to this story. Here's my story.
Yeah.
There's a pub not far from my house, right here in the little neighborhood that I go to from time to time. And they have some good pub food there, and they have wings that are pretty good. Don't know if you'd like them. You definitely wouldn't now. But their wing sauces range from mild, medium, hot, suicide, homicide. Now, I don't go in for these names.
Sure.
It's odd.
And can I just mention real quickly that's a big issue with the whole hot sauce industry.
What does that mean?
As far as I'm concerned.
First of all, I would put suicide as the most extreme, I would think, more than homicide. I don't know why, but now I'm just comparing homicide and suicide, which is, again, something I didn't want to do on the show today. But, like, it just seems like a weird thing. Like, mild, medium, hot. I'm with you. I mean, you could just say even hotter and hottest, I guess, because it gets confusing and they have to give them these scary names. I'm not just a huge fan of that whole thing. Mandy Moore, probably very much into it, probably thinking, like, these are some really kind of butch names. But Mandy Moore's operating at a completely different level when it comes to this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so I think, got the hot, right? Mild, medium, hot. I think I would usually go in and get the hot. One time, I think I tried the suicide, which would be one up from that. And it was the type of experience that you talk about sometimes, where it is not fun at this point to eat these. You are staring down a pile of meat that is killing you. Like, you're hungry, so you're eating it, but each one is like, and, you know, like, I'm not really into that anymore. You know, like, maybe when you're young, like the Flamin' Hot Cheetos, you kind of have the competitions with your friends, but, like, I just wanted some wings. So I learned my lesson. I don't order them anymore. Mm-hmm. Or do I? Because the next maybe not the next time I go in, but, you know, maybe several months later, and I've gone in there and ordered hot wings from time to time in between. But one time I ordered hot wings and they brought them out and they were clearly something more than the hot. They were either the suicide or the homicide. But I'm sitting there like, eating these damn wings.
Is it possible that they were involuntary manslaughter?
Now that I would order.
You were negligent.
I would totally order that.
But not to a criminal, not demonstrating malice.
Well, actually, Luke, that is what I ordered. Like, that is what happened. It was probably involuntary manslaughter. And
this was involuntary tongue slaughter.
Right? I'm not writing that down as a show title. Don't ask. Don't even.
Wait till you hear me read hotsauce.com's list of humorous hot sauce labels, which is where I'm reading. While you're telling this story.
But this is where, again, I don't go in for this something's manly or not, whether you're putting sugar or cream in it or if it's, like, spicy and hot. Yet, I was sitting there with Genevieve, and they were way too hot, and I was whispering to her, like, they gave me the wrong kind. These are way too hot. But I could not bring myself to tell them that they gave me the wrong spiciness because I felt like such a wuss, which is, like, again, everything I'm arguing against here. You would think I would just say, hey, you know what? These are the wrong spice. Could you get me the other ones? Because there's no way to prove it. Or maybe they could have said, you ordered hot. That is the hot. And, like, you know, there's probably somebody in the kitchen is making these decisions, maybe based on how many tablespoons of a certain kind of spicy oil. I don't know what. But it could have just become a whole thing where, number one, they just say, oh, then you want medium, which isn't the case. Or just generally speaking, I did not have the self-presence or self-esteem to tell them that the chicken wings were too hot and that they messed up my order. So I just ate them all. And I don't think I've gotten wings there since.
Wow. Now, this is – there's no point in me even asking this question because I'll not answer it honestly because it's a – this is an area of life that you don't like to discuss on the show, which is reasonable. But did you experience after effects from eating this giant pile? And did you get through all of the wings And did you feel sick later or uncomfortable because of all that heat?
First of all, I respect the question. I don't like to get super graphic, but I was also talking to a friend recently who came back from a trip to China where he was eating some astoundingly hot stuff. And that was my first question for him, too, because that is a phenomenon that is, again, that can be a moment of just you literally think these are your last moments on Earth and they're going to be in a bathroom. Like, I've been there before.
Sure.
I don't remember.
Well, like, if you've ever had Professor Pain into Ass's anal angst, butt blazing hot sauce, that you'll know that feeling.
Well, I'm going to go get my broom and see if I can just stand that up because I still
haven't done
that
yet. That's fine.
I'll
just list.
Yeah.
Have you ever tried
keep it clean,
analyze
Burbank.
This
no, keep
triple
it clean.
X garlic hot sauce?
Clean. That's... There's got to be clean ones.
Okay. Let's see here.
This is a family show.
These all involve butt stuff.
Why?
In one way. Because when you Google funny hot sauce names, hotsauce.com returns these. Oh boy, this of all of them might be my least favorite. And it's not actually dirty, but it's, remember that stupid Big Johnson brand when we were kids?
Yeah.
It was on t-shirts and it's all just this kind of like phallic reference.
Mm-hmm.
It's like Big Johnson's twice burning hot sauce. And then you have a nerdy guy with a really large hot pepper over his shoulder, and then some demon gals that are intrigued by his coolness. How about let's see, brand new bleep hole.
Oh, God.
And then it's just a picture of a hot pepper screaming in pain. Even a hot pepper will scream in pain when it goes
on?
Number two after eating this hot sauce.
Know.
And is that cannibalism?
It
Does
is.
This fit under your?
It's not okay.
Your metric of anyway. So your final answer on that was
I don't recall that one coming back to hurt me later. I don't keep captain's logs, which is a real bad choice.
How about
of words
this?
There.
This is not dirty. Would you eat a hot sauce called Burn in Hell Osama that just has a picture of Osama bin Laden
I've
on it?
I've seen that before. No, I would probably not. I like to keep the politics. Is that even politics?
Out of your
like
hot sauce?
I like to keep world events out of my hot sauce, yeah. I like to keep terrorism.
Would you eat a hot sauce called Choke Your Chicken that came with a small plastic chicken? Would you eat a hot sauce called Colon Blow Red Habanero Enema? Okay.
Nope.
Would
thanks for
you
asking, though. I appreciate
eat
it.
Eat one called Crapper John's Ultra Hot Sauce.
Mm-mm.
Would you?
Even
would you
less
describe
public
this as
radio-y.
your least favorite segment?
Yes.
That we've ever done.
Because it's not. I don't think these are funny. I mean, that's my problem. I think we're wasting.
Of course, they're not funny.
We're wasting
they're
all.
Funny
of, we're wasting all of our like dirty talk on an unfunny list that some yokel.
Would
came
you
up
eat
with.
One called Hemorrhoid Helper Burns Both Ways Hot Sauce?
Yeah, that sounds appetizing to me. Actually, that one got me. That sounds delicious.
Okay. Would you eat one called I Am Sofa King Stew Ped? I Am Sofa King Stew Ped, and then it says read out loud on the label. Would you, by the way,
it says read out loud on the label.
It literally says read out loud. The top of the label says read out loud, and then you're supposed to read that out loud as I guess you're buying. Would you buy one called Keep Calm and Pour More Habanero on it? At least that one's not dirty.
Yes, it's
just
best
dumb.
So far, yeah.
Would you use one that had a picture of a dinosaur on the cover passing gas called Mega Sore Ass?
Hey, can you give me 1 second here and just do a quick shout out to some of our listeners? Phyllis,
mm-hmm.
I am so, so sorry that Gus is listening to this. Probably under the
There's
covers right now.
Gus is ready to hear about Megasaur ass. How about this one? Okay, thank you. You said that this is too gendered and you're not wrong. What about one called Queen of Farts Hot Sauce? You know, this is not purely a male game, eating too much hot stuff and suffering stomach distress. Playing with the Queen of Farts, you know it isn't very smart, Andrew.
I do like that song.
I want to say for the record, the absolute lameness of these is why they delight me. None of these, and I'll stop reading them now, none of these are funny in the way they're supposed to be funny to me,
mm-hmm.
but they are all funny to me in the way that they're not supposed to be funny to me. The very idea that someone thinks they're edgy. They're living the edgy life because they're buying one of these things. It kind of reminds me of like my – I'm sure I alienated a lot of listeners yesterday, but my rant about Eminem and his album Music to be Murdered to or whatever it's called. Like the person who's like, ooh, okay, we'll see if I survive this album. They're probably listening to it while they're putting some hot sauce on something that's called like Knock Your D in the Dirt sauce or whatever. That I made that up, Andrew. Yeah, that just came out of my
really
brain.
Good.
You know,
I think,
special
by
food?
The way, the Eminem album might. I'm not 100% sure. I saw this kind of in passing while we were talking about this yesterday.
Uh-oh.
The Eminem album, that title might... I heard that he announced the new album coming out and also announced some partnership about trying to end gun violence or something along those lines. So there is a chance that this album, Music to Get Murdered By, is actually a so. Listen, I'm not a fan of Eminem. And, you know, I'm just not. Like, if you like him, fine. I'm not trying to defend the guy here because I'm some fan. But that could be like one of the type of title that isn't like, oh, look how badass it is because it's like. Murder. I mean, it could be social commentary about people dying by gun violence, and you know, he might be making a statement about that. Maybe I don't know.
I would guess that his politics are probably actually fairly in line with mine. I mean, I don't know, but and so that's a good piece of context actually, in case that's what it's if that's what it's referencing. But even so, to me, it's still drawing in. You're sort of appealing to a certain kind of like, you know what, the opposite of what most people want. People want to live. What about getting killed? Like, that just – people want to eat something that tastes good. What about something that burns your booty? Like, that just like the opposite of the norm is something that just doesn't – it doesn't appeal to me as a marketing strategy.
Mm-hmm.
I was starting to say, and I don't have any kind of power out or even power start for this.
Oh, that's another hot sauce, about, isn't it? Power out?
Yeah. See, now you're getting in on the act. Now you're getting into the spirit of the show, my friend. the food that was probably like that in our household, you're talking about wings being kind of a special thing. It was artichokes for some reason. It would be a big deal. I didn't grow up in a house with a very strong or consistent food culture. Like, you know, as I've said before, it was a lot of kids and a kind of a haphazard culinary approach. It would just be a combination of fast food sometimes, but not all the time. But when we could talk my mom into it, or, you know, like the big dish was heavenly chicken. My mom would make heavenly chicken sometime, which was, you know, just kind of like a typical thing where you put some kind of Campbell soup and chicken and some sort of, you know, flaky topping and bake it. We loved that, though. The heavenly chicken was the best. We didn't eat a lot of stuff like that, though. Like, my mom, for all of her great qualities, she wasn't that big on cooking elaborate meals. But for whatever reason, every once in a while, there would be like a sale on artichokes. And my mom would bring home a bunch of artichokes, and it would be a whole thing because we would steam them, and then there would be melted butter. Oh, that's not true. I think we actually ate them with mayo, which seems weird. That feels like my dad's contribution because, I don't know, my dad is a white guy from Montana. Maybe that's how they did it out there. But we would eat we would steam up all these artichokes, and then you would get your own artichoke. That was a big deal too because we always shared stuff, not even out of poverty, out of just like my mom's sense that like an order of French fries was more than one person needed for themselves. So it'd be like, we're at Burgermaster, you're getting fries, but you're sharing them with your sister. Something about getting my own artichoke and sitting there and peeling, you know, the whole just sort of like elaborate process of like peeling each leaf off, and also the outer ones kind of not being quite edible, but then as you're getting closer to the middle of the artichoke, you start to get more and more edible leaves, and like that, I don't know, I just loved it. Probably a couple times every summer we get artichokes, and I would just be stoked. And to this day, I love eating artichokes. It's a whole fun thing. In the summertime, you will catch me eating artichokes like two or three times a week, probably because I identify it with really positive childhood memories.
I didn't know you ate them so much. This is another example, another weird example, how you are very much like Genevieve. I had never eaten an artichoke in that manner growing up at all until I met Genevieve. And at one point, I think we were making dinner, and she said, oh, I'm going to get artichokes as a special treat. It was always a special treat for her growing up, eating it the same way. And you do the thing where you you scrape the leaf with the top of with your top two teeth, right? And then you discard the bottom part, almost like kind of edamame sort of.
Totally.
Yeah, she taught me that. And I never knew about the joys of that before. And then we actually haven't made those in a really long time. You say you still eat that? You might still do that? Like once? Did you say like once a week you might still do that?
Twice in the summer, easily.
Really?
It's just like it's a fun thing. And the whole process of like you're talking about scraping them with your teeth. And like I said, as you're like you start on the outer ring and like sometimes the farthest outside leaves, there's like nothing there. They're just waxy. But you got to pull them off and try. And then as you pull like the next layer off and you're like, I'm getting more artichoke meat. I don't know what you'd call it as I bite into this. And then as you get towards the center and then the whole thing of like getting the artichoke heart out, getting out those little fine, very like hair-like kind of part of the artichoke that you don't want to eat, scraping that all out and then just being left with this like beautiful, just the essence of what's good about the artichoke, the kind of very rich flavor that you're getting in those leaves, but in small doses. And when you get to the heart of the artichoke, it's just all that is so satisfying. You're building towards this thing, and then you get to the mother load.
I can't remember finding the artichoke heart. Like, I know what an artichoke heart is. Like, they'll even have it sometimes at a salad bar. They'll have, you know, those hearts that you can just put on your salad. Like, I like them. I can't remember, like, kind of getting, like, how many leaves does it take to get to the center of an artichoke? But I can't remember extracting it myself.
I'm sure Vives can show you, but if not, sometime this summer, you, me, artichokes.
Yeah.
I will show you because it's basically the like kind of lower half. It's like it's the stem, but not the like bottom part of the stem. And you sort of cut it into quarters and then you scrape out the stuff you don't want and you kind of there's a whole process to getting down to the sort of best bits of it. That's another thing. I started buying just like canned artichoke hearts. I think it's like Napoleon is the brand or something. He was a noted artichoke enthusiast, which is why I think his name is still on the label. But artichoke, like whatever, pickled artichoke hearts or canned artichoke hearts are so good. And the whole can of artichokes, the entire can is like 80 calories. And like at night, that's a great like nighttime treat because there's almost nothing going on calorically, but it's pretty filling. And you're like, if you like that kind of stuff, I like anything pickled. I'm very glad that we've learned that this fermentation, which is slightly different than pickling, but that fermentation is good for you because I love fermented things. I have just been pickling and fermenting myself for years by way of sauerkraut and pickles and artichoke hearts and baby corns. So I may live forever, Andrew.
I'm looking it up. Actually, not to sharpshoot you, but I think the brand you're looking at is actually – it's called Napoleon Dynamite, and it's a little picture of Napoleon with fire coming out of his butt. Is that the kind of artichoke heart you're getting?
Oh, yeah, Napoleon's Dynamite.
Napoleon's Dynamite. Yeah, that's
the brand. My butt parts hurt real bad.
God. What do you think was the better part of the show today? Like, let's say – because, you know, in American Public Media, they're talking about putting some podcasts, like having actually audience research input on I don't think we're up for that because that that would be something, but let's say that we went through an actual like audience research and we like kind of like had listeners and non-listeners listen to this episode. What do you think would score better, the you listing hot sauce names that are all related to digestive activity or us just talking about artichokes and their delights?
Man, it's so hard to pick between those two really strong, strong moments in the show.
Yeah.
But that's the beauty of this program, Andrew, is that some people will love the nostalgia of a guy just talking about eating artichokes as a kid. Mm-hmm. For some people, that'll be what's great. And then other people will just love the pure comedy of the names of some of these hot sauces. And we're able to provide a whole range of experiences for the listeners, including Andrew, a little moment of sincerity here at the end, if I can. This Joaquin Phoenix speech from the Oscars. Joaquin Phoenix is a real kind of mystery to me because first of all, I think he's a pretty reserved guy. Like he does his acting, but doesn't do tons of interviews. He doesn't seem like somebody who particularly loves being in the spotlight when he's not shooting a film. Like, this would never happen because I'm not high enough on the food chain, but were they to say to me, do you want to go do a TV profile of Joaquin Phoenix? I would be like, yes, of course. And then I would immediately have a knot in my stomach over actually trying to interact with him mm-hmm. because he just seems like a guy who is a bit awkward. Would you say that that's your kind of your guess about like if you were to be interacting with him IRL?
Yeah, I think so. I think I was a little judgy of him during the period where he was putting on a persona. I don't remember the details.
Yeah, that was
of
that
this.
Artism thing we played at the top of the show.
Oh, is that what that comes from? Yeah. And so that seemed a little like, you know, me anytime somebody seems to be kind of thinking that they're I don't know, putting on airs or bigger than the sum of their parts or whatever. I don't have the exact words to describe what I'm mm-hmm. talking about right now. But that,
bigger
I remember
the airs
time,
of their parts.
It just seemed like very eye-rolly to me. But yeah. Aside from that, everything else you said seems to scan, that he seems thoughtful. He's not an attention seeker. Maybe that's what put me off about that other thing. It seemed like attention seeking. Sorry, can't talk.
Yeah. But looking back on that, by the way, we talked about that a lot on the show when it happened, which was this the sort of story was, oh, Joaquin Phoenix has kind of lost his mind and he thinks he's a rapper now and he's just showing up on these shows like Letterman being weird. And it was an attempt by him and I believe Casey Affleck to make a kind of edgy documentary where,
oh, right.
you know, everybody thinks he's having a mental breakdown, but then it's actually just it's sort of a high art piece. The problem was people sort of figured it out that he wasn't losing his mind. And what the reason they noticed that he wasn't or something was up was because Casey Affleck was always standing near him with a camera filming him, which was kind of a dead giveaway.
Yeah.
And I don't remember what our take on it at the time was, but I think part of my problem with it was just you guys didn't think of a good way to shoot this. Like, I actually think the idea of making a kind of quasi documentary or whatever you'd call it, experimental film about if a very public figure sort of melts down and what that looks like. I don't think that that's an uninteresting idea for a film, mm-hmm. but you have to really dial in the practical side of how are you going to shoot this so that it doesn't give away what you're doing.
Yeah.
And that was where I felt like that project kind of fell apart.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and but, I mean, you're reminding me or even telling me more about it than I ever knew or I have since forgotten. But back to your point, so I'm interested to hear this tape because I was listening to some show, doesn't matter what show. Doesn't matter at all what show I was listening to, but I was listening to it yesterday.
Well, wait, though, because I do like to kind of like look some of this stuff up.
Yeah.
Can you recall the name?
I can't. Let's see.
Okay.
What else are they talking
all right.
about? I can't. I mean, I listened.
Must have been The Herd with Colin Coward. Probably would be my guess.
Have an opinion, jerk. I listen to so many things. You know that. I'm constantly sampling new stuff. I don't get into ruts where I just like, kind of like get stuck on one show. I'm always just sampling around, seeing what's out there.
Definitely.
It's kind of part of my job, right? Like as a podcaster, it's important to know what other podcasts are out there. So on one of these many shows I was listening to yesterday, somebody was making fun of the speech, but only referenced
it on the
very
poll.
Briefly.
Does Andrew listen to a lot of shows?
So anyway, I'm interested in your take because, again, it was a quick aside, somebody making fun of what I think you're about to play. And so in my head, I just thought that he had made a fool of himself at the Oscars to the degree that I thought about it at all. But you're saying that what you're about to play is actually very moving.
Well, for me, it was like I didn't see it when it happened. In fact, I didn't even know that he'd won an award. And then I saw people tweeting about Joaquin Phoenix and tweeting basically like excerpts from it or again, and I couldn't tell if they were being snarky or not. But for whatever reason last night, finally, I don't know, it's like some ABC, some Twitter feed that I follow just posted kind of, you know, I guess the majority of the speech, 3 minutes of it. And I actually really, oh, you know what it was? It was Lena Dunham, who said, well, I think it happened. I think Joaquin Phoenix finally turned me into a vegan. And I don't think she was joking, by the way. Mm. And so I was like, okay. I'm a big fan of Lena Dunham's. And I was like, okay, I guess I'll click on this now. And again, he seems like such a kind of quirky dude that you just never know. Like, you put him on stage for 3 minutes and let him talk about whatever he wants. What's he going to say? What's he going to talk about? So this is that speech. I'm just going to play part of it. I don't, you know, maybe I'll pause it. Maybe I won't. But it was interesting to me.
I've been thinking a lot about some of the distressing issues that we are facing collectively. And I think at times we feel or we're made to feel that we champion different causes. But for me, I see commonality. I think whether we're talking about gender inequality or racism or queer rights or indigenous rights or animal rights, we're talking about the fight against injustice. We're talking about the fight against the belief that one nation, one people, one race, one gender, or one species has the right to dominate, control, and use and exploit another with impunity.
You'll appreciate, Andrew, that he is trying to tamp down the clapping. He's literally like putting his hand down, like, nobody clap, please. This is not what I'm trying to do here, which was also winning for me because it's like I don't get the sense he's going for clapter.
Mm-hmm.
I get the sense that he has this stuff really on his mind and on his heart, and he wants to say it. And he also probably knows he's on a limited time thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, again, that seemed like a little bit of bonhomie from him, which I sort of appreciated.
I think that we've become very disconnected from the natural world, and many of us, what we're guilty of is an egocentric worldview, the belief that we're the center of the universe. We go into the natural world and we plunder it for its resources. We feel entitled to artificially inseminate a cow, and when she gives birth, we steal her baby, even though her cries of anguish are unmistakable. And then we take her milk that's intended for her calf, and we put it in our coffee and our cereal.
Not me. Not me anymore,
no,
by the way.
Oh, my God.
And I want to mention
listening?
That I was passing on milk in my coffee Friday at midday in Hollywood, hours, almost days before he made the speech.
Yeah.
Unrelated? I don't think so.
And I think we fear the idea of personal change because we think that we have to sacrifice something to give something up. But human beings at our best are so inventive and creative and ingenious. And I think that when we use love and compassion as our guiding principles, we can create, develop, and implement systems of change that are beneficial to all sentient beings and to the environment.
Now, this is interesting, too, because I think, you know, what he's trying to say is this is particular to like eating animals, I think, or consuming, you know, animal products. I think he's saying we kind of don't want to give that up because we feel like it's going to suck. But we're good at inventing things that are pretty much, you know, fill that void. And I will note that he and his I believe he's married to Rooney Mara, the actor.
Oh, really?
And yeah. And they were afterwards. There's this incredibly cute photo of them sitting on some steps somewhere. She's wearing like a beautiful dress that she wore to the Oscars, but she's wearing Chuck Taylor's under them. And they're sitting there just eating some, you know, like fake meat burger from some, you know, joint in LA that makes, you know, plant-based burgers. And they're just like grubbing out on these plant-based burgers, like with a big smile on their face. I thought like that was really charming. And I think that that would support his point that like, I don't think his point is that no one should eat a hamburger. I think his point is that we're rapidly inventing things that are as good as hamburgers, and maybe they're just doing a little bit less damage. I'm not playing this to try to tell anybody in our listening audience what they should or shouldn't do. It's also funny that Joaquin Phoenix delivering these thoughts seems like Joaquin Phoenix playing a character. Like, not because I think he's being fake. I think he's being genuine, but I think he's the kind of actor that is so good at being believable that it's just like this almost feels like a Joaquin Phoenix character to me. Here's the last bit of this speech here.
I've been a scoundrel in my life. I've been selfish. I've been cruel at times, hard to work with, and ungrateful. But so many of you in this room have given me a second chance. And I think that's when we're at our best, when we support each other, not when we cancel each other out for past mistakes, but when we help each other to grow, when we educate each other, when we guide each other towards redemption. That is the best of humanity. When he was 17, my brother wrote this lyric He said, run to the rescue with love and peace will follow. Thank you.
It's a pretty intense moment there at the end. I had sort of forgotten that his brother, yeah, River Phoenix, was a musician as well as being an actor. And when he passed away, I believe that Joaquin Phoenix was there that night, you know, and sort of was trying to save his life, or, you know what I mean? It was like very close to the actual end of River Phoenix's life out there on probably Sunset Boulevard, wherever it happened in L.A. And like, you kind of, Joaquin Phoenix has gone on to have such an illustrious career that you kind of, you forget that for a long time he was River Phoenix's little brother.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then, and also, like, honestly, like, it sounds hokey, but that line, you know, like, run to the rescue with love and peace will follow. I mean, that, again, that sounds like some of my Ram Dass bullshit. Hmm. But I do think it's a strong concept, which is kind of like, if we are trying to, the world is such a complicated place and it's so hard to know what to do and how to handle things and how to try to make it a better place. But if you just come into it from a position of just trying to love people, it feels like that's the best way to do it, and that the sort of, you know, hopefully best outcome will come through. This idea that, because it's when we're disagreeing about stuff, particularly in the current political climate or talking about animal rights or talking about any of this stuff, it's hard to know what posture to take when you're coming into a disagreement. But the idea that you would do that with love and that would have a good outcome, I think, is a pretty powerful thought. And the fact that it was written, that version of that statement was written by his 17-year-old brother. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I just thought it was a really kind of lovely moment.
Yeah, that's the first time hearing it. He bites off a lot there. He makes this quick reference to cancel culture, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah.
I'd like to hear more of his thoughts on that, because, like, essentially, I agree with what he's saying there, but every situation is different. This is something I've been thinking a lot about because I follow a writer on Twitter who is she's a local writer. She's written some things that have been controversial in the past. And she's always railing against cancel culture, and she considers herself canceled, and she will always harp on this. And she is one person who I think about. I was just talking about her the other day with some friends. I don't feel like kind of giving her name here or getting into the details of it because it gets complicated. But she's the type of person who I think of when I remind myself that people contain multitudes and that we don't have to agree on everything, because she's somebody who, I'll bet you, if you broke it down, like, mostly our hearts and minds, she and I would be very similar as far as our outlook on the world and how you should treat other people. But she's really got a bee in her bonnet when it comes to cancel culture. And she also always confuses, and I don't know if she's doing this as a joke or not, but she confuses canceling someone with criticizing someone, which is a huge problem for me. And there's a lot of people who have been quote unquote canceled in our culture who haven't really been canceled. They've been criticized. But then it's almost a way of making everybody say, shut up, you can't have an opinion about what this person said or did, because if you criticize them, then he's being canceled. And, you know, I think that some people should be quote unquote canceled. I think Bill Cosby has been canceled, and it's a good thing. I think other people have done things that they should atone for. And if they atone for it, I mean, that's something that Joaquin just said that I found very interesting, is he said, I've been a jerk sometimes.
A scoundrel.
A scoundrel, which
good,
actually
good,
is,
you know,
yeah.
I mean, thankfully I took that bet in Vegas, the over-under on how many times scoundrel would be mentioned. I took the over, which was at one.
Which was zero, yeah. But so anyway, it's kind of interesting. I actually think scoundrel there is an interesting word. It's a poetic word. I like that word. It also, though, can minimize it too. You know what I mean? What is scoundrel?
Right, it sounds a little
mean? It's a little cutesy.
Right. I almost expected people to start laughing,
because
when you say I've been a scoundrel, it's kind of like saying I've been a rapscallion. I've been a little bit of a, it's almost like you were bad, but you were in an Oscar Wilde book.
Exactly.
So you were
kind of
not that bad.
Or like, oh, Benny Hill, as he's chasing around a bunch of half-clad women, like he's being a scoundrel, or he's sexually harassing a bunch of people. Now, please don't come at me with the context for Benny Hill. I'm just throwing it out there.
You know,
like
the pro Benny Hill cohort.
I mean, just like whatever.
Literally rise from the dead and learn what email is and email you.
I just want to acknowledge that is not a perfect analogy there. I'm just freewheeling. feeling here. But anyway, the point of him saying, listen, I've been hard to work with. I've been cruel. Like, now cruel is the opposite, right? He's admitting that he's done things that he considers cruel, which is a very strong word. But it's interesting. Like, he just kind of hits on that and moves on. And I don't know exactly what his bigger message there is. I would think that I would agree with him. But I also think that this idea of we're canceling everybody is untrue. I think people are talking about things. I think people are criticizing things. There are some cases where people have maybe lost their positions of power, maybe needlessly. I don't know. But I also think that people are overusing the word cancel, and it's kind of creating a backlash where they're actually having a chilling effect on us having conversations about what is appropriate.
Do you think that that's actually – I'd think that cancel, quote unquote, cancel culture is getting canceled a little bit right now. I keep talking about this Megan Daum book that I've been reading called The Problem with Everything, which raises, I think, some really interesting points about it. My opinion would be that, quote unquote, first of all, I agree with you 100% that criticism is not canceling. Those are not the same thing. And people have the right to say what they want to say. And then other people have the right to say, I didn't like that. And I also would agree with you that, like, let's take Al Franken as an example. I think Al Franken is commonly held up as a person who maybe was just the allegations against him about being inappropriate emerged at exactly the wrong moment for him, that even if now those allegations came out, he probably would not have had to step down from the Senate. But it just came at a time when the sort of energy around this topic was in a particular place. That being said, so Al Franken's not a senator anymore, and I think a lot of people – some people think that's appropriate. Some people rue that or lament that. But he also is like – he can go play the Paramount Theater and it's sold out. So like that would be to your argument that he's not canceled. Like they're like the people that are canceled are like Harvey Weinstein, who should absolutely be canceled, Bill Clinton. Is Louis C.K. even canceled at this point? Unclear, you know. I mean, he lost a lot of money, but – So I'm basically agreeing with you that canceling is not the same as criticizing, but I also do think that cancel culture I think there is a pushback that is starting. Now my question would be, I don't know if it's silencing people. Like, do you feel like people are less, if somebody does something bad or that they perceive to be bad, do you think that people are less likely to speak up about it because cancel culture is being canceled?
I don't know. I mean, I did raise that, right? I guess I did claim that a second ago that it's having – I don't know if I said it's having a chilling effect or can have a chilling effect. I just know that I get irritated when people use cancel all the time, and I don't think we've seen a lot of instances of actual cancellation. I think that Al Franken is a good example of someone who you could argue was canceled. You're right. He's still not a nobody. He still can sell out theaters, but that's also different than being a senator. Now, by the way, I want to be very clear here. I don't know how to feel about the Al Franken thing. I've thought about it a lot. There are just too many factors in that story that I don't know. And maybe if I read everything, I could come up with an opinion on it. But I think it's complicated. I would say losing, you know, being one of the most powerful, you know, 100 people in the country because of his status as a senator, like in a position to actually make real change as opposed to, you know, going around talking and selling out theaters and making money. I think those are different. So that, I would say, is an example of cancellation. Whether or not it's justified, I literally don't know. Again, Weinstein canceled, but even still, before his trial started, showing up in comedy clubs and like just like, you know that whole story too, and still like having this kind of sense of power by being the most powerful man in this room at small, I think it was a New York comedy club, making people very uncomfortable, and him just feeling like I have a right to be there. And maybe he, and, you know, as an American, I guess he did have a right to be there, and he was there, I believe, at the invitation of the club owner. But, you know, I don't know. The idea of I'm just saying that people say that people are canceled when they're not. Louis C.K. has not been canceled. He's making money. And also, I think, and let's go back to what Joaquin Phoenix says that I think is really important is whether or not you own your actions. I think that's a big part about whether or not you should be have redemption, or at least in the eyes of society be redeemed, and whether or not you should still maybe have a big megaphone or a place of power should have to do with when you realize that you've mistreated somebody or many people and you really feel accountable for it. I think of Dan Harmon gave an apology that you were very impressed with when things were going on, where he was talking about the way he had treated. Was it one person or several people on his staff?
I mean, yeah, I guess impressed with is a weird way to describe it, because it almost makes it like him the hero of the story, which, by the way, I would say to his credit, this was a This American Life piece, and the sort of overall kind of thrust of the piece was, this is what it sounds like when someone who has abused their power and they apologize honestly and thoroughly, this is what that sounds like. This is what a real apology should sound like, was kind of the gist of that article or that piece on This American Life. And then Dan Harmon declined to be part of the interview because he said, like, this isn't the story of me. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't want to like center myself in the piece once again as like the good guy, which I was like, okay, that's really the right answer there too, in my opinion, you know? Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's it's funny. I was this weekend hanging out and having conversations about old Dan Harmon. We should maybe try to get him on the show, but, I guess I don't have anywhere to go after that other than to say, I also appreciated that while he was talking about cancel culture a little bit, Joaquin Phoenix, he also, I felt, really led with we need to teach people, or, you know, if people are, what I took away from that part of his comments was, if the person who has transgressed is genuinely and in good faith trying to learn a different way of being, the better outcome would be for that person to learn and change and grow than for that person to just cease to exist and get stuck where they are. But it's all based on the idea that the person is learning and changing and growing. Harvey Weinstein is not learning and changing and growing. He is spending ludicrous amounts of money to try to discredit women who he sexually assaulted, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's like, I think that that's a completely necessary component to any conversation about if someone is or is not quote unquote canceled. But again, I just to go back to this, I agree with you, Andrew, that fewer people are like, it's a, like, you can count on like one hand the number of people who are legit canceled from being able to like work anymore. And then a lot of other people, it's just more like, you know, they were, who was I was having, I know I keep like, I keep referencing these very vague conversations because I'm trying to be, I guess, diplomatic, but I think I can mention this guy who we've talked about before and had on many radio shows in Seattle, who is kind of considered the quote unquote mayor of Seattle's nightlife, owned all these venues and clubs in Capitol Hill and the Five Point, one of your favorite places.
Used to be.
I was having a conversation this weekend with somebody who had knew him for years and had directly been assaulted by him. Mm-hmm. And this was not a person who was, in the news over this. This was just I literally was having a conversation about, mentioned this person's name in passing, and this other person I was talking to, their face just fell. And they said, let me tell you about this person. And it was jaw-dropping, Andrew, like to be talking to somebody and hearing the first-person account of the behaviors of this other person and how it was just an open secret in Seattle and how so many people knew about it and how it was brushed off and swept under the rug. To just hear about the experience directly from a person who clearly went through it, it was totally shocking to me. And it made me feel really shitty for all the times when we highlighted this other person and held them up as an example of this or that, or joked around with them because they were banning Google Glass mm-hmm. at their restaurant or whatever it was. Yeah. It just made me feel like a total piece of shit in being part of that economy.
Yeah. I mean, in your defense, and, you know, there. Unless you were privy to something that I wasn't, like, I don't think that we were in on the sure. open secret of that. But, no. Yeah, I mean, that's an infuriating case. And this is another person who, like, was he canceled? Well, he had to disinvest in a bunch of his, you know, properties, literal properties and projects he was working on. And he had stakes in a label. I didn't even realize until this, like, he had a record label that he was involved with the launching of some prominent musicians and bands' careers, all this stuff. And the one thing that he held on to was the Five Point Cafe, which was traditionally one of my favorite places in Seattle. And of course, I stopped going there because I'm not going to support this guy. But you know what? He waited less than a year before the announcement that he was going to start reinvesting and that he's buying the Mecca Cafe. What I started going to after the Five Point, there are these two places that are very Seattle. They're like this kind of diner dive bar hybrid that I've only truly experienced in Seattle, and they both have this very Seattle vibe, you would see why I would like both of them. Well, he kept the 5 point. I stopped going there. I started going, not that this story is about me, but the point is, he waits less than a year and he's in the news again because he's going to buy this other kind of institution bar place. And it's going to be like kind of him getting back into the biz. Now, as a, you know, as an American citizen, he has the right to do that. But when you look at the way our laws are set up so that there has been no justice for these women because of the statute of limitations, and you don't even have to wait that long before you just start slipping back into the mainstream again by buying establishments and who knows. And like, even he's not canceled.
Well, and what I was struck by, and this is just something that I really need to remember, was you hear about allegations and when you don't know the specific people involved or when you don't know the victims, you're sort of, it sounds bad. My heart did not understand what it must have felt like to be a victim of this until I talked to somebody who was a victim of it by total random chance. You know what I mean? Like, there is this, particularly for us as men, I would imagine, because we're usually the perpetrators and not the victims of this. Not always, of course. There is, to read about allegations against a Harvey Weinstein is one thing, and it sounds horrible and terrible for all the obvious reasons. But to, like, if we were to sit down in a room with somebody who went through it, I just think it is so intense to hear somebody who's been through something talk about it. And I feel like, I don't know if it's like, I don't know how you get the word out more on that. But there was something, I feel differently about this having had that conversation with this person last weekend, mm-hmm. if that makes any sense. It's just, it was shocking to me how visceral it was and how much it felt different, how much my perception of the events are changed forever by having had that conversation. Mm-hmm. And then I'm thinking how many other things, because basically the story on this guy is, yeah, he was being a creep. And unless you got really into the nitty gritty of the articles, that'll just, most of the people in Seattle that are vaguely aware of the story will be like, oh, that guy was a creep. And then, yeah, well, he had to sell some stuff and now, oh, he owns this thing. Well, whatever, that guy's a creep. Like, that's the level of awareness most of us have around it. And it's like, to hear what was really going on is just so mm-hmm. sickening and troubling mm-hmm. that it's just like, and that's the one time when I have that insight. There's 1,000 versions of that story that I don't have that insight on. Mm-hmm. That's where I was kind of feeling just like, holy S. By the way, if we thought that talking about hot sauce mm-hmm. fart jokes was going to be the least appropriate mm-hmm. for children part of the show, mm-hmm. we may have moved into a more serious topical category.
So let's return to our list of topics. You have artichokes mm-hmm. and their deliciousness. Mm-hmm. You have a list of hot sauces that are based on the uncomfortable digestive process. Mm-hmm. And you have you and I spending approximately 15 minutes delving into cancel culture and where we are as a society regarding that. What do you think is in the lead for popularity?
I mean, again, how do you pick between those three blue ribbon topics? Can it be a three-way tie for first?
That makes the most sense because they're all related.
Here I go once again with the email every week. I hope that it's from a female. Oh, man. It's not from a female.
You know who should be canceled, Andrew? Jackson Brown.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, are you kidding me? So I mentioned on the show yesterday how I crossed paths with him very briefly in L.A. And made a little, like, I guess, kind of joke to him. And he did not appear to be vibing with my joke. And the joke was just that I was, in doing this TV interview, I was delaying his sound check by a minute. And I said to to Mandy Moore and her husband, I was like, oh, are we delaying Jackson Brown's sound check? And they were like, yeah. And I was like, yeah, we don't want to be doing that. And everybody laughed and we literally stopped the recording. And then I realized he was sitting in the back of the room and I said, oh, hi, Mr. Jackson Brown. Sorry for delaying your recording. And he just looked up with this withering look. And I had put my hand out to shake his hand. So he cautiously extended his hand, but at no time said anything to me. To sort of be like, hey, it's no problem, or nice to meet you, or anything. He just was like, you know, not impressed, which is fine. That's his right. We got an email. I'm going to assume that this is okay to say her name. She didn't ask to not say her name. Kara in Austin, Texas. Hey, guys. I, too, found myself on the receiving end of a withering glare from Mr. Jackson Brown. When I worked in a wine bar years ago, we were in the middle of a busy dinner service when a small group of people came into the bar. I approached one of them and asked if I could add them to the wait list for a table. He responded they just wanted coffee. I was deep in the weeds at that point, so I may have asked him for their order with more urgency in my voice than usual. The man explained that they did not want any disposable plastic products. I assured him our cups were biodegradable. Skeptical, he took the cup from me, inspected it to ensure it was paper, and gave me the okay to proceed with their lattes, or as my dad would say, lattes. That's my parenthetical little add-on to this. Before I got to the espresso machine, one of our regulars pulled me aside and whispered that the man was Jackson Browne and that he was in town for a gig at Austin City Limits Live, and asked why I had addressed him with such casual familiarity. As the rock hauler left, way to go, Kara. As the rock hauler left, I waved and said, "Have a great show." And he paused to glare at me with the purest annoyance. To summarize, Mr. Browne is admirably eco-conscious and kind of a grouch. Dr. My Eyes is a jam, though. Signed, Kara in Austin, Texas.
You know what? I'm going to say it. Canceled. Jackson Browne is canceled.
Are you kidding me? As far as I'm concerned. Then I get a text. I get a direct message from a dear friend of mine, IRL, who listens to the show. And she said, let me scroll back to this particular text message we were texting last night. She said, this person's husband is a musician in his own right. According to my husband, Jackson Browne is super anal about his sound at shows. My husband was playing at a fest. By the way, she doesn't say my husband. She says the person's name, but I'm trying to be a little bit.
Okay.
It would be weird if she just constantly referred to him as her husband. That'd be a little formal. My husband was playing at a festival where Jackson Browne was playing, and he had people working on his sound all day for a very small show. My husband also said, quote, "And he kind of knows he's Jackson Browne." So the opposite of Mandy Moore, my friend writes. That's like, honestly, within like 2 hours of the show posting, both of these messages had come in, and they were both consistent that he is not the most pleasant fellow in the experience of those two people and moi.
Is that person who sent in that text message somebody who you're surprised heard the show? I'm wondering if it's somebody that we both know who I'd be surprised.
No, you don't know this
listening.
Person.
Okay, good. Okay.
It's Phyllis Fletcher.
It is. Oh, okay. Yeah,
and
she
I
listens?
Can't believe she's still listening.
I can't believe
apparently.
It.
Actually, she hears it coming out of Gus's bedroom as he weeps softly as he learns that the world is a horrible place.
With a lot of hot sauces. Friday on the show.
You love that part of the show.
We had Sean De Torre. Is that how you...
Uh-huh.
You said Sean De Torre. What's his nickname, though? Smudge? It's not Smudge. What is his nickname?
Zhuzh. Sean De Torre, a.k.a. Zhuzh.
Can we get a character and name them Smudge? Because I feel like this show needs a Smudge. We were talking about how our friend Snacks, the funny bunny, the rabbit who does stand-up comedy, has a monthly variety show, and I was there for the very first night of it, and I told Snacks that, you know, I had had some drinks, and I told Snacks that I would be happy to do stand-up if she is still doing the show a year from now, and then I immediately regretted it, and it was certainly the gin and tonics that were talking. We got a voicemail from the bunny. I was really hoping that the bunny was going to forget about this and just let it pass. Apparently, that's not in the cards.
Hey, Andrew, this is Snacks. So I'm just sort of getting ahead of things, just trying to get all my ducks in a row in terms of booking. And, so I think that we're all good to book you for the August show. That would be 1 year from when you told me you wanted to perform. We're excited to have you for the August edition of Snacks Time. This is going to be so great, and I can't wait for your debut, as it were. And, Luke, I've been trying to contact your agent for the last 6 months, and I've been getting out of office replies. And so I think, maybe it would be a good idea to check up on him. Just maybe there's a little bit of cause for concern there. I don't know, just thinking out loud. But you guys just keep up the great work. And I hope to see you the third Wednesday of every month at Snacks Time. Okay, bye-bye.
Just thinking out loud. Just thinking out loud. You might want to check in on Morty.
That voice is deeply troubling to me.
Well, that's pretty
It's weird because when you see it,
bunny,
well, when you
it?
See it, when you get Snacks, you saying funny bunny for me is like I feel the way that you feel when I say Ass Blaster Three Hot Sauce. Oh. Actual name of one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I meant to say Ass Blaster Three Hot Sauce. When somehow when Snacks is in full regalia and talking, it's weird, but it all kind of works.
Mm-hmm.
But just the Snacks voice without the overall kind of visage of the rabbit is really upsetting.
Mm-hmm. And when you say dressed up, you just mean the white T-shirt that says Snacks on it.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah. This is like, I can't see the T-shirt.
Yeah.
Snacks, the so completely normal 5'10 rabbit. That's just a normal rabbit that lives in the world.
I loved her in Donnie Darko. That's fantastic.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Yeah, so, anyway. All right. So, does that mean so you're on the sketch? Does that mean that we can look forward to seeing some grocery store related humor, some light news topic and grocery store related humor from one Andrew Walsh in August?
I don't think I'm going to be ready for that. Jelly, as they used to say. And also, I don't think so. I mean,
you have good boundaries.
That's exactly the word I was looking for. Like, I have a strong track record of disappointing my friends and saying no to people. So we'll see what happens. I mean, the problem with this one, though, is that I freaking volunteered this, and that is the thing that really kind of bothers me about it. It wasn't like somebody asked me and put me on the spot, and I felt the need to say yes, and now I'm trying to back out of it. It was a really stupid move on my part. I don't know. I have mixed emotions about this whole thing. I guess I need to start maybe thinking about jokes, maybe not. That's my full statement as of now.
I would definitely come to that show. In fact,
see,
I will
that's what
come
I was
to
thinking.
Show.
You know, that is another thing about this is. If I do it, I don't want you to know, and I don't want the listeners to know. And
really?
I apologize to you and the listeners, and maybe I shouldn't have played that voicemail, but because that's way more uncomfortable for me, which is weird because, you know, anybody who would take the time to show up for that to support me would be very, by definition, supportive, right, and rooting for me.
And you're really working against Snacks' larger interest of people coming to the event.
Right, exactly.
By saying, please no one come to the event.
Of course, right? That would make me even more uncomfortable. Like right now, I wouldn't probably know most of the people who are there with the exception of a few folks.
I've said this on the show before, and it's not like it's profound, but and I lose sight of this a lot, but at some point, in the process of doing Livewire, which, by the way, next Thursday, Alberta Rose Theater, Portland, Oregon, will be there doing Livewire. Hope to see some of you there.
Want me to do some stand-up?
Would love it. Honestly, I'll book you right now.
Yeah.
We do have some great stand-ups coming up. Hari Kondabolu will be there, Cameron Esposito, not all next week, but throughout this spring season. So check, just Google Livewire, attend a live show, and you can see all the people we have lined up. But anyway, I always feel very anxious before the show, but what I have realized is that the people in the audience want it to go well. Like, they're not against me. They're on my team. They have a lot invested in it working out. They got babysitters. They drove there. They bought tickets. Like, they're not hoping it sucks. They're hoping it's good. And there's something about that that helps me feel calm. Because I, for the longest time, was walking around with this weird thought of, like, it's them against me. Mm-hmm. Like, they want me to fail. And it's like, they don't want me to fail. They want me to succeed. And when I can connect with that thought, I feel less nervous.
Yeah. That's the Cairo radio on you. You know, like, that was my – and that was a huge mistake for me. I think I've said this to you before. But one of my biggest mistakes when I did my own nighttime radio show for 1 year on Cairo radio was I really wanted it to be – you know, very little separation between me and the audience. I was reading emails live on the air as they were coming in. I just wanted as much communication as possible. But what I quickly learned was these people hate me. And therefore, every time I walked into that studio, it felt like – and that wasn't everybody. I mean, there were some people, like a lot of TBTL listeners who – were, again, nice and supportive, but what I got stuck in my head were all the people who just would call me a commie and, like, that I don't know anything and that Obama is a communist and I'm a communist. A lot of commie talk on Cairo. But anyway, so I would go in, and what quickly happened was I started every show in the back of my head feeling like it's me against them. Turns out that's not a great way to approach broadcasting.
That is... That gives me anxiety to think about, because – and you had Nick John was a great producer and you guys had a great rapport on the air. I was lucky in that Jen is a super strong personality and frankly could have just hosted the show without me. Sean was an awesome element of the show. I had a lot of like – I had a lot of people on there with me, so it didn't feel like me against the listeners. It felt like us against the listeners. and that was – because when you were on that station, I feel like they were already starting to kind of like consolidate the certain elements of the station were starting to consolidate around this kind of particular idea of like, you know, the like Seattle politicians can't be trusted and et cetera, et cetera. So it was to the degree that station has always had like more conservative listeners than you or I are probably a good fit for. I feel like it was really going in that direction hard when you had your own show, which was probably bad timing all around because those people were probably really coming out for you, and it was probably – that was probably intimidating.
Yeah, but it was also my own doing too. Like there were definitely things I could have put in place to say, hey, Nick, can you go through these and give me the – you know, give me the ones that you think are appropriate. And, you know, not that they all have to be positive, but, you know, at least go through the, like take – you know, just give me the ones that are readable on the air, not the ones that make me feel like I'm under fire. I could have done that. And also, like, I don't even know that they were the majority. They were just the ones that stuck in my head because I'm a broken toy myself, you know. So, you know, like – me saying that wasn't even so much me taking a shot at the Cairo listening audience, although I'm happy to do that. It was a little bit more about a strategic mistake that I really made, thinking like we're all going in this together and we're going to all be friends. And then instead me really obsessing over all of the negativity out there. And that really kind of, I think that had a bad impact on the show. I mean, I'll never go back. I don't know why we're talking about this, and I apologize for bringing it up.
I've invited Golf Man to your performance in August.
Oh my God. Oh my God. If you have Golf Man's contact, get Golf Man on stage and earmuffs, kids. Ugh, no, actually, I forgot about some.
Gus, you're not invited.
When we were talking about his stuff the other day, I remember how funny he was in his angry rants. This is, again, as a troll listener, we used to get really abusive emails from. And in a certain way, they were funny, and I'd read some on the air. But while we were talking about this guy on Friday's show, I went back. I knew I had some saved in my Gmail. I forgot about just the straight-up racism and just, like, poisonous misogyny and the other things that were in here that are not actually funny at all.
Yeah, no, not – well, you know, there was a time when that stuff was funny, but that time is over.
Right. Exactly. Well,
it's been canceled. Hey,
You beat me to
it. Nice.
All right.
All right. That is going to do it for today's show. Thank you so much, everybody, for listening. We are going to be right back here tomorrow with more Imaginary. Oh, hey, one other thing I'm doing. I mentioned this already, but tomorrow night, Wednesday night, I'm going to be at the Seattle Public Library talking to my friend Courtney Hameister about her book, Okay, Fine, Whatever. I don't actually know which – I think it's like downtown. I think it's the big Rem Koolhaas Library. I don't even know. It's somewhere in there. Probably can be Googled. But anyway, be there tomorrow night. And so if you're looking for something to do, I assume it's free. Come down and say hi. That would be fun as well.
That's a really nice auditorium there. I used to record talks there.
Yeah. Nice. Thanks for bringing in the little Queen of Hearts.
Oh, yeah.
Love it. All right. Thanks for listening, folks. We're going to be here tomorrow. See you then. Until then, please remember, no mountain too tall.
And good luck to all.
Hanging out by Power out.